I'm Allison Kaskowski, otherwise known as the Allison K. I'm a fitness innovator and entrepreneur turned business mentor and retreat master. A client experience is more than just making the sale or the transaction. A client experience is about how it's put together so that clients can receive amazing real transformation. Here you'll hear all about how the industry leaders are creating amazing experiences. I'm always going to give it to you straight because I know your time is valuable. Are you ready? Let's get into the show.
Hey, everybody, it's Allison Kaskowski. Thanks for joining me again today for another edition of Creating the World's Best Client Experiences. This is the business edition of our very successful Tuesday flagship show, The Ultimate Journey of Self-Care. So if you have checked us out on that platform and you're here, we welcome you. If you are a business owner, and odds are if you're listening, you are, we welcome you as well. We like to always highlight client experiences from two perspectives on this show. One is we always want to maximize customer value, always. And number two, we always want to see if there's a way that we can highlight how we can help our clients get results in the best possible way. So today I'm talking to Rudy Rodriguez. I had the pleasure recently of being on his very successful show, the High Profit Event Show. Rudy is an entrepreneur, but he's a Naval Academy grad and a former naval aviator, which is pretty cool. And he has lots of experience in how you can make sales from your event. So we're going to be talking about that today and also some of the challenges. If you're listening to this, odds are you're in the retreat and event space in some way, shape, or form. And maybe you've run into some challenges as to how you can maximize customer value from that standpoint. Thanks for joining me today.
Happy to be here with you, Allison. It's a pleasure to exchange on our podcast.
So, all right. So tell my audience just a little bit about you before we get started.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Naval Academy graduate. Went afterwards, flew airplanes for the Navy, did reconnaissance. I want to make sure people don't confuse that with being a jet pilot. I flew an aircraft called P-3 Orion, did anti-submarine warfare in reconnaissance, two deployments. Got out, went to work for a mentor, helped him build out his sales teams, helped him run sales at his events. And the short of it is, helped him do over $2 million in a single weekend at his live event with a sales team. And from that experience, I was like, wow, I got developed a skill, identified a problem, and I formed a company around it. Actually, over the last 10 years, I've helped dozens of event leaders to generate over $50 million in sales through their events into their coaching, education, and mastermind type programs.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very, very happy to share how we did that. And I look forward to sharing more about that here on today's episode.
Yeah, of course. So, okay. So a lot of people listening know, I mean, we obviously do a lot of retreats here at CU Fitness and my agency. And so a lot of people listen to me because of that. But I really think that there are a lot of people that believe, I don't know that it's really fair to say they don't believe, but I think there are a lot of people who probably don't quite know how to make a sale in a good way from an event. They probably feel like once people buy to come to your event, that's the sale. So what do you say to that?
It's a great question. I know the typical top of mind problem is, hey, how do I fill my event?
Right.
And then it's like, hey, now they're here, how do I engage them? And then once they're at the event, it's how do you continue to keep them close to the fire? Because I think of an event as like a fire. You got to bring people close to the fire so they can learn, grow, and shift their business or their health or their life. But what tends to happen is when people leave an event, as no matter how good the event was, no matter how motivated they got, life tends to get in the way. And if they don't have another layer of support with you when they leave the event, then the motivation will tend to wane. Right. Or even the performance will tend to win over time.
Right.
So I'm a big believer that we want to help lead people from events to events, right? To continue their journey and their steps. So it's very important. Sales and enrollment is a critical step in that. Getting somebody to your event is a lot of work. It is very hard. But once we got them there, you know, it's curating the life-changing experience, helping them make those identity shifts, those behavioral shifts. But ultimately, such that you can have them make a meaningful decision by joining one of your programs, hopefully a premium program that's 10,000 or higher, because when people invest at a higher level, they're going to pay a lot more attention. When people pay more, they pay more attention and they're more willing to change their lifestyle, which is ultimately what it's all about, is helping people change their lifestyle in a way that's going to be beneficial for them. Yeah. So I'm happy to share details about that, but I want to kind of give my mindset, my philosophy about that.
Okay, great. So obviously getting people to the event is a big hurdle. I know we did our first in-person live event last year. I've been a part of dozens of events in my career. And we sort of did a very small boutique event last year. And what I found, let's be honest when I say this, is that there were a lot of people who bought initially, like at the very beginning. There were people that knew me and knew what we were doing. And then I sort of felt like the last group of people just kind of trickled in over a period of time. And I know that that's probably pretty typical with events, with how people make plans today. People are notorious for making decisions at the last minute. I'm just wondering, with bigger events, is that your experience too?
Of course, it's human behavior. Human behavior, and I know there's a bit of a curve to it too. There's certain personalities that they love to go for things right away, right at the beginning. You're going to get a big boost right when you make an announcement. Then you'll have more or less a trickle effect along the way. And then you'll have the people who naturally wait to the last minute to make a decision, and including me in many cases, you know, because we're busy. Some people are busy professionals, don't know what's going on. Maybe they're waiting for money, you know, whatever that could be. And so typically right leading up to your event is we'll have another boost of registration. So it's very common. I would say plan for that. I would have
yeah,
a plan.
I find that a lot in the space too. That there are, there are always people, like I've had people literally buy 2 days before we started that they were coming. If I have an open spot, you know, it just never ceases to surprise me.
Exactly. Yeah. So that is a normal human behavior.
Okay. All right. So once we get them to the event, walk me through kind of your philosophy a little bit on how we curate that experience of keeping them close to the fire. I know as a retreat leader, you know, I take a lot of pride in ensuring not only that I create a great event before people get there, but I spend a lot of time in what I like to call a baby belief plan, like the mindset and the energy space where I want to go, where I'm imagining that people are already getting those results. So what is your philosophy on ensuring that people get that fireside experience, to use your word?
Yeah, to clarify, I mean close to the fire as in like, you know, get to the source of where the energy, the change, the message is. Now, I want to define what we're talking about when it comes to events, because there's a difference, like, in my mind, between a retreat and event is a very general term, right? So the different types, let's define different types of events. So there's retreats, right? There are a virtual event, like a webinar could be an event.
Yeah.
There are seminars, typically 1 day, 2 day, 3 day seminar. I just came back from a 5 day seminar on meditation.
Right.
The different types of events. So different types of events have similar problems and also different problems. You're always going to have a people problem because it's a problem and an opportunity wherever we have human beings. There's things that just come up regardless. But when you're doing a event, regardless of whether it's small or big, to align with what you're saying, Allison, I'm a big believer in preparation. Preparation, whether it's a 10-person retreat or a 100-person seminar or a 1,000-person virtual event, preparation is key. When I work with clients, we start preparing, you know, normally 100 days out from the event. And the way we start doing that is actually by talking to the people who are coming. We interview people. We ask them questions about what they want to accomplish out of the event, what their dreams are, what their challenges are, where they want to be 3 years from now. And we compile a lot of market research leading up to the event. Not only does it help benefit us in refining the messaging, marketing, and promotion, but when they actually get to the event, one, they've actually thought about why they're coming, and two, we actually will summarize and reference the top trends that we saw from those interviews.
Yeah.
Those pre-event interviews, I found whether it's for 10 people or for 100 people, obviously if it's 1,000 people, you're not interviewing everyone, but a cross section of your audience, and that right there makes a world of difference. And I think that's the difference between a professional and someone who's an amateur in the business.
Yeah. So this is probably why I have a colleague out in Las Vegas who I'm actually heading to his event in a couple of weeks. And this is the third year that he's done it. And he's masterful at doing exactly what you said. He'll ask people to record a short video explaining why they're going, why they're excited about going. You know, I recorded a video clip after my experience last year for him to use in his marketing this year about my experience. And I think that's really helpful because I think people kind of look for themselves in those moments.
Yeah, absolutely. So you asked a question. I want to make sure I answer your question around how do you get them close to the fireside per se. So I think one, getting to know them and through market research, through interviews. I personally like to actually speak to people and interview them and like actually study the transcripts and go off of that. Typically, I do like a 15 to 20 minute interview for each participant or cross section of participants leading up to the event. Now, obviously, formulating the event itself to be in alignment with what the needs of the customers are. So oftentimes, I'll discover in those interviews are undiscovered needs, and then I will customize the experience off of that. Like I'm in a specific facilitator for a retreat, not a 3-day seminar, but a 4-night retreat for a head of about 15 people in Cabo last month. And I brought in a specific specialized in one thing because I kept hearing that as a theme throughout the interviews, like people need help with this one thing. So let me do that. Yeah. So listening, right? Yeah. Now, once they're at the event, I would say, you know, how do you keep engagement? One, you deliver on what you promise. Uh-huh. At the end of the day, you build trust with people when you can talk about their problems.
Yeah.
If you can describe someone's problem better than they can, they trust you. And if they trust you, they're likely to continue to work with you. They're likely to continue to attend the next event with you or join your program. So the more clear we can get about the problems of the people attending and the more we can speak to their problems and provide solutions, people do not get sick of you talking about them and their problems.
Well, and people also, I think, want to know that you understand them. You know, if you connect.
100%.
So it's like you said, you're listening, but you're also connecting with them and showing empathy. And I think that goes a long way too.
110%.
Yeah.
110%. So, which brings me to one of the main problems people face when they're leading an event, and whether that's a 10-person event or a 100-person event, and it's the problem of how do you continue the relationship with the participants beyond the event? And there's several aspects of this. So of course, there's making an invitation, right? There's a skill of speaking from the front of the room and make an invitation. Sometimes people do it as a written invitation, maybe in a folder or what have you, or a sales letter. Regardless, you're making an invitation from one to many normally, right? You're not sitting down with everybody individually during the course of an event. Even if it's only 10 people, that's 10 hours. You don't have time for that as an event leader during an event. Now, the problem though is that there was actually a study that was done by Harvard Business Review in 2011. It was called the response time of online leads. And it is online leads, but I did think there's parallels to whether it's an in-person event or an online event. And effectively what they did is they interviewed 42 US-based companies and they figured out how quickly do these companies respond to an inquiry of a lead. And what they discovered was that the majority of companies either didn't respond at all or responded in over 72 hours. The majority of companies, very few companies responded under 72 hours, and a very, 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 very select few companies responded even within 1 day or 1 hour.
Interesting.
Really interesting, right? I mean, it was a minority of companies that responded within 1 day or 1 hour. Like maybe there was like a couple that responded within 5 minutes. But they did a follow-on study to the study to figure out, okay, what's the impact of that? What's the impact on that when it comes to sales? And what they found is that waiting just 72 hours, actually waiting just 24 hours to respond, decreased the likelihood of having a meaningful conversation with the decision maker by 7 times. It went down 7 times.
Yeah.
That's a 700% less likelihood that you're going to have a meaningful conversation with the decision maker. Waiting just 24 hours. But it got worse. Waiting 72 hours or 3 days from when someone expressed interest actually showed that the probability of having a meaningful conversation with the decision maker went down 60 times. It's a 6,000%. Less probability of getting to have a conversation.
Is it just because people refocus their energy and you're kind of like not front of mind anymore, right? They've kind of moved on.
Yeah. So we have to put a name and a label to this phenomenon. I call it Lodi. I call the monster the Lodi monster.
A Lodi.
A Lodi monster, right? Yeah. So Lodi stands for the law of diminishing intent. Okay. And what law of diminishing intent states is that the more time that passes from when an intent is expressed, the less likely that intent will happen, right? Mm-hmm. Or like the interest wanes over time. So it's the law of diminishing intent, lodi for short. So that is the monster. That is the problem. It's a human problem, right? It's not personal to you as an event leader. It's not personal to them as an attendee. It's a human problem.
Yeah.
We leave events and life gets in the way. We get busy. Other things take our interest and time. It just diminishes over time. So that is the main problem that people are dealing with when it comes to keeping them near the campfire after the event.
So really, the bottom line from what you're saying is really engage with people right from the beginning and stay in front of them, but not in a way that's really annoying, if that makes sense. It's like the salesperson that's just always right here. You don't want to be that person, but you want to be connected enough so that you have the opportunity to continue the conversation.
Yeah, it's funny you give that example because I have a salesperson that's been calling me about an event that I'm considering attending, and he's been like blowing up my phone every day, and he kind of feels like that, like he's the person that's in my ear. And what was interesting thing is this salesperson never even asked me about my goals or my interests or my challenges or my pain point. And he's trying to sell me something for $12,500. And the only thing he was asking was qualifying questions, which is fine. I know I qualify. I told him right away. I read the qualifications. I know what they are. Yes, I qualify for your program. But he never once asked me a single question about my problem.
That's really unfortunate. But unfortunately,
a lot of people
are doing that now because that's bro marketing, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know what it is, but apparently he's well-trained by an expert. And don't get me wrong, he's not a bad person. And I was able to build some rapport with him, but it's like, it's just missing. It's like he doesn't know my problems. Doesn't know my business really. Like, and he's just blowing me up now. It's like, I don't know. Anyway, that's a side.
I think that's gold for people listening, that's not something you really want to make sure that you do. You know, it's whatever happened to just building a relationship with somebody and just asking, hey, tell me a little bit about you. What's important to you? You know?
Yeah. Why are you here? Why are you calling? How can this be a win-win? How can we create value for you?
Not just how can I help you today?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Not just, do you want to buy something right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, let's be honest, we want to make the sales, right? We're in business to make sales. We're in business to help people, but we're in business to make sales too. So I don't want to make light of that. I know that that's an important thing, but I think there's a right and a wrong way to do it. So I'm thrilled to announce that I'm partnering with a brand new product, and it's called Celevate. This is an amazing, tasty, gummy supplement, and it comes in two varieties. One designed to help you with inflammation and recovery, perfect for after a workout, or if you've had like several days in a row where you've really pushed it and you're really starting to feel it in your body, this is the perfect addition to a regular routine. The other formula helps address focus and memory, which, let's be honest, I think we can all use a little help there, right? What's different about Celevate is that not only does it taste great, but it has amazing antioxidant power. So many vitamins and supplements on the market today, you either have to take several in a single day to even see any kind of tangible result, or most of the time, a lot of them don't even give you the result that they promise. And Celevate checks both boxes. I take one of each formula every day. And what's more is that they pack and travel really well. So you can take some and put them in a Ziploc bag and throw it in your bag when you're going out of town, and they won't melt. And it just is the perfect addition to whatever it is that you're doing every day in the way of vitamins and supplements and whatever else works for you. So I knew that I had to get in here and at least tell you about it. I would love it if you would head over to their site and give it a try. I'm actually going to offer you a really special deal. You can find this amazing product at their website, and that's spelled Celevate.com, which is CELLEV8.com. And use my special promo code, the Allison K 2024, and you can save 15% off. I would love to know what you think once you have a chance to try this.
Correct, which is a perfect leeway into what I want to share here. So I do believe that there's a solution, right? So what my company does at Wingman is that we actually sell your mastermind. If you're an event leader, we sell your mastermind or programs for you with a sales team at your event without using heavy-handed sales techniques. Our philosophy is enrolled, not sold. So we want people signing up for their reasons, not just because we're skilled professionals that know how to use NLP to get them to sign on the dotted line.
Right.
And And so coming back to problem solution. So we talked about that problem being, low dire, law of diminishing intent. So one of the ways we found to address that problem, and typically this is for events that have 50 people or more, right, to do this effectively, but to have a proper enrollment process from the before the event, during the event, and after the event, to make sure that every single attendee is not just having that pre-event interview, but also getting to meet one-on-one during the container of the event with a sales professional or an advisor or a coach, how we label the sales professional in terms of experience, but someone who truly is wanting to provide value-first, consultative-based assessment with an attendee to identify their problems, their desires, and help build a bridge, if it makes sense, to help connect the dots and build a bridge between your program and their problems and their needs.
Right.
And when that happens individually, people, one, feel heard and understood, and they can customize things for their needs. But two, it can happen during the event. It's not you as the event leader having to do one more thing.
Yeah.
Or you can have a professional doing that with you and for you. And the goal is to actually meet with people during the container of the event.
Totally. I can see that.
Have that meaningful conversation and invite them to apply for your program. I'm a big believer in an application, a proper application and qualification process. Because one, it helps understand who your customers are, but two, it also makes sure that you don't bring any bad apples into the bunch, right? If you're running a program, or even if you're working privately with someone one-on-one, you want to select your customers and your attendees.
Yeah.
You're totally. Gonna work with.
So
we invite them to apply, secure a zero risk deposit to show commitment and consistency. Then they'll take the next step towards a bigger step. We actually read their applications and then actually meet with them. It is, but I find so many times it's done in a very gimmicky way. Yeah, it's not read. It's done in a very gimmicky way. And people don't actually take the time to read and understand the applications of the people who are attending. And but we actually read them and we actually meet with them for a secondary interview, oftentimes two-on-one,
okay.
To really make sure that they're being advocated for properly. And at the end of that interview, at that point, if we make sure that it is truly a mutual fit, and there's no other reason for the applicant to not be part of the program besides, working out the finances, then we'll invite them into the program, and then we will have a conversation about the money at that point. And typically we find that if we're able to really address people's problems and needs, then the money's not as big of an issue, right? And it's typically either they have it or they don't, but even if they don't have it, they're willing to get resourceful if we've done our job properly.
Totally, yeah.
And even if they do have the money, doesn't mean they join the program, right? Money is not as big of a problem as people make it out to be.
I agree with you. Yeah.
I think money's not big as people's biggest resources. It's their motivation and willingness to be resourceful.
Yeah, and so, it's also people seeing the value, because that's really what it's about. A lot of objections, people will throw the money objection, but it's really not that at all. It's either they don't understand what they're getting, right? They don't know the promise, or they don't understand what they're going to walk away with, right? They don't understand the value. That's on us. That's what we have to communicate.
110%. 100%. So part of, again, the process that we do is that preparation work is clarifying with the interviews, using that information. In fact, right after this podcast interview, I'm meeting with a client who's doing an event coming up this month, and we interviewed 12 of their attendees, and we're reviewing the summary document of all of their pain points and desires, and we are now going to customize the keynote presentation based off of the interviews, and customize the offering messaging based off of the interviews. We're about to do that here after this interview. So yes, delivering a great presentation informed by the interviews, and then delivering an offer that also meets their needs, and doing that on a one-on-one consultative basis within the container of the event. I find that that's the secret sauce that allows people to not only be effective in their enrollments into their higher end programs. By the way, our teams have signed people up as high as $50,000 programs, right? So the process I described works to help people make big decisions. And regardless of whether they buy or they don't buy, one of our commitments is that people are satisfied with the process that led to their choice. We actually do what's called an NPS score, Net Promoter Score survey, that goes to their phone via text after every interaction with one of our advisors or sales professionals. And they let us know 1 to 10, 10 being the highest, how likely they are to recommend this session or experience for with a friend or family member. And 9 or 10 is a promoter, which is what we're looking for. If any, a 7 or 8 is a passive, so someone that can go one way or the other, and 6 or lower is the detractor. So we have these feedback systems that the moment somebody reports anything less than a 9, I get a notification, our team gets a notification, and we're able to see their feedback, and we actually go back and listen to the recordings, et cetera. Especially if they're like a 6 or lower, we really want to know what's going on. So quality assurance, by the way, when it comes to having a sales team, and really any area of business, quality assurance is the number one constraint that it comes when scaling a company or business. How do you keep the consistent message and culture and ethos and making sure that sales is promising the same thing as fulfillment, et cetera, front of the room, back of the room, et cetera. So a high level of quality assurance is required to do that. And that's part of our process as well, which is another whole nother can of worms.
Totally. So what you've really shared here today is that I think should really enlighten a lot of people listening, and that this isn't just a matter of getting people to the event and then saying, by the way, here's what we're doing, right? It's like, there's so much more to that process. Now, having said that, I don't want to overwhelm people listening, but it's all the more reason why you want to think this kind of thing through, that you can literally leave not just a lot of money on the table, but, you know, a lot of people who can really use your help.
Agreed. At the end of the day, that's what it's about. It's what do we need to do? It's ethical, legal, and moral so that we can continue to help people.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what it is for me, and he's putting that mission over the commission.
Yeah. So what would you say then, before we wrap up, is what do you think the biggest challenge is? Is it not having this thought out process? Is it just not being proactive enough? There's probably more than one, but just what in your view is probably the biggest challenge?
Well, the biggest challenge for the event leader who hasn't done it before, hasn't had a team before, maybe had a team that didn't have effective enrollments. What is the biggest problem? I'm just going to be honest. The biggest problem with any business is the psychology of the business owner. I look in the mirror every day and say, that's my biggest problem right there.
Yeah. It all starts with us. The buck starts with us.
100%. So that's why I'm a big believer in events. You know, I've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in attending events and learning, growing, et cetera. And, you know, I don't want to ask someone to do something I'm not willing to do myself.
Yeah, I'm the same way. So last question, what do you think your biggest hurdle personally has been in developing the way that you do this for yourself? I know you heard you say that you've done this for other people, that you've had mentors, you've had people that you've worked with, but you've obviously probably had quite a few stumbles along the way that has kind of brought you to now. What are some of the challenges that you've overcome as a business owner?
Oh, it's a long laundry list. I'm 10 years full-time in business now. Long laundry list. But at the end of the day, they all come back to me in the mirror, looking in the mirror. And typically it's come down to some form of abdication instead of delegation. You know, the notion of inspect what you expect, right? And not taking personal responsibility for some area of my business.
Interesting.
You're so right.
I think that as we evolve and grow, so will our business. It really stops and starts with us at the
end of the day. Agreed. 100%. If there's some shortfall, when there's some shortfall in the business, I look in the mirror and say, hey, what do I need to learn? Where am I lacking in skill or mindset or belief? And oftentimes I go seek something, and I find that my business would reflect that growth or lack of in myself.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So what's your parting words of wisdom? Can you offer us something that people can walk away with? Maybe a little nugget. You've offered amazing value in our conversation, but I always ask my guests for like some parting words, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to self-promote here for a moment here, but I think it is a parting message. So I have a podcast that you mentioned in the beginning called The High Profit Event Show, where I interview experts in the event industry. I do my best to interview people who either lead events or support events that have been in business for 3 or more years, who have done well over 7 figures with their events, and just asking them, you know, what's working in your processes. So I want to invite your audience to come on over if you're interested in events and you want to learn more about how to run a highly profitable and impactful live event. Check out our podcast, The High Profit Event Show. We're coming up on episode 100, and I promise you, we put a tremendous amount of effort into curating those guests. They are A-list, including you, Allison. You are on there as well. You know, come on over and listen to our podcast. Really appreciate having you on as a listener.
Yeah, Awesome. I so appreciate it. Thanks so much for making time to talk to me today about what you do.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure to be with you and your audience. And, you know, for those of you who are still listening in, come on over and, you know, you can add me on Instagram and just say hi. You know, I'm a very sociable person and love to meet you. Just let me know you came over.
Yeah, and you consistently like post with all of your travels and all the things that you do, because you're obviously living your message, which is really important.
That's my goal. My goal is to be the change I want to see in the world.
Yeah, totally. So folks listening, there's so much value in this episode. If you heard something that was really helpful for you and you know someone in your world who you think needs to hear this, please copy the link to this episode and share it with them as a free gift from me. Or if you like, you can connect with me on my site, www.theallisonk.com, and just hit the connect button. It's in the upper right-hand corner. And just write to us and we'll take care of it for you. We're so grateful for all of you. You guys are the reason why we've been so successful. In just a few short months, we will have been on the air for 6 years. And that's just really hard for all of us to believe here, but we're very proud of what we've created. And you guys are part of that success. So this is Allison Katzkowski with Creating the World's Best Client Experiences. We will see you next time. Bye.